resurrection in a way.
Yeah.
They with Roy it. Hibbert and Pacers and, of course, OKC.
Westbrook saving some face, yeah. Yeah. All right, well, let's go to the Stiggy's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline because it's time to focus on football. Tonight it's finally here. We've only been talking about it for, well, whenever the Super Bowl was, I guess. Actually, I started talking about halftime of the Super Bowl because the game was so terrible. Michael Schottie of Bleacher Report joining us again. Good to have you back, Michael. How are you today?
I'm doing absolutely great. That has to be the best and most heavily edited intro music I've ever had.
Yeah, that darn cube. We don't have the radio edit, so we just mix it up ourselves.
Yeah, it took me a little while to
DJ
do that.
Jazzy, Matty T, I'm like, make sure you get all the F-bombs and all the other bombs that are in there. So that's a good tune. Okay, so tonight's the night, my man. I know you've had a close eye on this for some time. We had some interesting things go on outside of just the draft the last couple of days, NFL-related as well. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to know who's going to be number one. Where does Johnny Manziel end up? Is he the first quarterback? Start where you choose.
Yeah, I think if you're Houston right now, what you're doing or what you have recently completed, maybe as soon as this morning or even late last night, what you have just completed is what typically happens for a team picking high in the draft. You have your ideas as a coach. You have your ideas as a GM. You've gotten input from the owner. Even if he's not making the choice for your team, he's still given his input because he owns the team. But you are having your personnel directors, your head of college scouting, your lead scouts, your area scouts, anyone who's had an off-the-wall idea in a meeting, you're having them come in one-on-one and basically saying, tell me why I'm wrong. And you might say to a scout, I'm going to draft Johnny Manziel number one, tell me why I'm wrong. Even though you have no actual intention of doing so, you're just trying to get as much information on the table as possible. You're trying to find who in your organization is going to get up on the table for a guy, who you are going to tick off by drafting a certain guy, and how strongly some of these convictions are of guys who maybe just said something in a meeting and you brush it off, but now all of a sudden they're yelling it at your face, how the team has to draft a guy or pass on a guy for a certain reason. So that's what you're kind of doing to close out your own personal stuff, but you're also calling every single team. We've already heard what the Texans are trying to get for that pick. We've also heard that they're trying to lower that to entice teams to trade up. So I think there is a chance. I'm not saying it's a great chance. It's what I would do, that Johnny Manziel still goes number one. I think there's a chance out there because the Texans need a quarterback. I'm pretty sure he's the top guy on their board. I'm pretty sure he's the top guy on a lot of boards out there. There's still a chance. If it's not him, it should be Jadeveon Clowney. And if Manziel doesn't go number one, he very well could be a trade target at number two. I certainly think he's going to go in the top five. I'll say the same thing about Clowney. If Manziel or, for some reason, Mac, which is I think is a mistake, if one of those guys goes number one, there will be teams trying to trade it for Clowney. Whatever happens, though, the Texans need to make sure they're not picking scared. I think there are people who don't want them to pick a quarterback because of Derek Carr. They want them to not pick a pass rusher because of Mario Williams. Whatever it is, they need to pick the player who is tops on their board, because if you're passing on guys for a safer pick, to bring in Khalil Mack or to bring in a Greg Robinson because for some reason a safer pick, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. Grab a Jadeveon Clowney, grab a Johnny Manziel, and let the chips fall where they may.
Okay, so if they trade out of the first spot, and let's say they go down 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 spots, and maybe the position they have, they don't have anybody rated highly at the position they were looking at, which would be defensive end, we assume, with Jadeveon Clowney first. Where else would the Texans be looking that they feel like they could get some value for it, maybe a 6 or a 7 or an 8 or whoever? I heard Buffalo might be in the mix at 9 even to try to get up to that first spot. And interestingly enough, I would suggest that Buffalo take Khalil Mack. They can just keep him right there in town. That'd be perfect.
I think if you're trading that far down in the draft, the conversation has to shift toward how much we're getting, and then the importance of the pick probably drops a lot because you're getting such a good haul for that pick. You're almost getting, especially if you're dropping to like 7 or 9, you are getting a Herschel Walker-style deal for that pick. So, I mean, we're talking first-rounders in next year's draft and probably the year after. They're going to be just as important. So there's less of I wouldn't even say a need for a home run, but then I think you simply take the best player on your board, even if it's at a position that maybe doesn't feel as flashy. I mean, an offensive lineman makes sense for Houston. I wouldn't take an offensive lineman at number one if I was Houston because they still got Dwayne Brown, who's one of the best offensive linemen in the league. But he's getting up there in years, and they've had some problems at right tackle, so maybe you grab, I guess if you're later on in the top 10, maybe you grab a Jake Matthews, you grab a Taylor Lewan, and say, this is going to be our right tackle for the next couple of years, and then we're going to move to left tackle, and we're going to have zero drop-off after Dwayne Brown starts to decline. Maybe you draft an Eric Ebron. You've used a ton of double tight end sets in the past. You've lost a tight end this offseason, so you grab a guy who's essentially a third wide receiver for you, and you beef up your receiving core, or you grab that quarterback that I said earlier. They need a quarterback. Maybe Manziel isn't their top guy. It certainly makes sense. He's the guy that the owner prefers. He's near town, but maybe they really like Teddy Bridgewater. They just don't want to draft him at number one. Whatever you do, though, if you're trading down that far, I think you have to get value with that pick, because if you trade down that far and grab a bust, or if you trade down that far and still reach for a guy, you're not taking the draft process very seriously, and you're basically just saying, I want a quantity of picks rather than a quality of picks. And I think we've seen in the past that that's the kind of poor attempts at the draft that the Texans, that it wasn't just quarterback play last year. Having a lot of talent that wasn't good enough is why the Texans are where they are.
NFL's lead draft, or lead writer, rather, Bleach Report's NFL lead writer, Michael Schotty, let me try that again, joining us in the zone on the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline. Khalil Mack is a guy that is sort of the anti-Teddy Bridgewater. He's the guy that nobody knew much about, at least guys who don't follow Buffalo football very closely didn't know much about, and all of a sudden he's the rage as far as the draft goes. Teddy Bridgewater's a guy we all knew about, but he's that unlucky soul. And guess what? Next year, we're going to have the same kind of scenario because this thing always happens around the draft. But talk to me about those guys. What happened with Bridgewater? What did they discover they didn't see through the year while he was putting up all the ridiculous numbers through his career? And how did Mack become such a hot commodity playing at a small school like Buffalo?
Mack's an interesting story. In fact, I traced this earlier on this week in a feature for Bleacher Report where before the draft, I mean, dating back to like last April, after last year's draft, this was a guy who everyone kind of had off on their radar, but the best things you heard said about him was maybe he's a second rounder or maybe he's a late first rounder. And then we started to kind of hear that train pump up a little, but there was actually a tweet from Gil Brandt, who's like the godfather of NFL scouting, just before the season started about how scouts were raving about Khalil Mack. And people started to pick up on it then, and a couple days later, Buffalo played Ohio State, and Khalil Mack had a coming-out party. And all of a sudden, when that happened, he started to get pushed up draft boards. Oh, this is a first-rounder. This is a late first-rounder. I think this guy could go in the top 15. I think he's a top 10 player. And all of a sudden, as we watch more and more of him, we realize he could be one of the best players in this draft. Now, I don't think he's better than Clowney, and I don't think he's good enough for the top pick in what is looking more and more like a class where there's seven or eight guys who could, you know, be in that discussion. Mack's not that guy for me. Mack is a very good player. Mack could be a cornerstone player for your team, but he's not Clowney. He's not a transcendent level athlete. As for Bridgewater, I have the opposite sort of situation for him. As you said, he's my top quarterback. He was my top quarterback in October. He was my top quarterback in November. After all the games were played, he was my top quarterback. There were no secret bowl games. There were no secret practices out there that dropped Teddy Bridgewater on anyone's boards. What happened was they started to get excited about other guys. They started to be less excited about Teddy Bridgewater's physical tools. He opened the door by not throwing at the combine, by not participating in an all-star game, and by having a really poor pro day. All of that took him down a peg, and it made him less of a bulletproof athlete. And so we started to talk about his character, which is nonsense. We started to talk about his size, which is a very real concern, but not if you're going to pump up Derek Carr, who's the exact same size, or Johnny Manziel, who's a little bit bigger up above him. We talked about his schedule, that he didn't play great opponents, which is, again, a solid concern, but not if you're going to pump up Blake Bortles, who played the exact same scheme. Mm-hmm. For me, Teddy Bridgewater is 100% the best quarterback in this draft class. When you watch every other quarterback's game tape, they walk out to the field, up to the line of scrimmage, and they look over at the sideline because they want their offense coordinator to tell them what they're about to do. Teddy Bridgewater walks to the line, looks at the defense, assesses what is going to happen, changes his blocking scheme, changes the hot route, changes the play. He does what we expect NFL quarterbacks to do when they see a defense. He is the only guy of these top quarterbacks who's ready for that. Because of that, I think teams that pass on him are going to be awfully sad they did.
Okay. Well, the only thing I've heard is from some people that I do respect as far as their opinion on him. And, you know, again, all I see is the guy putting up huge numbers and doing a great job, but that he throws from kind of under the ball as opposed to quarterbacks who sort of get on top of the ball and they worry that, you know, from an accuracy standpoint and aren't, you know, in a delivery standpoint, that could be an issue. You don't see any problem there?
I don't.
Are there guys like that in the NFL that throw like that? Because I guess it's not something I see a lot.
I think if you look at 20 different quarterbacks in the NFL, you'll find 20 different guys' release points.
Probably true.
20 different guys who have a slightly different quirk. And the more coaches you talk to, they'll discuss that when they talk about draft picks, but then when they get them into camp, they rarely try to change a guy. Because if a guy has been successful, as Bridgewater has, I mean, 70% completion percentage, I don't put a ton of stock into metrics without context. But when I looked at Bridgewater, when I charted him out, when I've watched him, I've scouted all these guys by watching at least six or seven games for Bridgewater. I've seen every game of his college career. He is the most accurate passer in short to intermediate in this draft. I think there are other guys who might be a little more accurate long, and I'm talking over 20 yards. And if that's what worries you, that's great. But you're only throwing three or four of those passes a game for most NFL teams. So maybe if you're Cleveland, who has a vertical offense and you're in a cold weather stadium, maybe you don't like Bridgewater, which is ironic because we hear more and more in the last couple of days that their metrics and their scouting department loves him or is enamored with him, as the actual quote said. But maybe you're worried if you're in a situation like that. But honestly, I would go to battle with Teddy Bridgewater every day. And there are things to like about Manziel. There are things that as you project and expect him to get better that you might like about Carr or Bortles. But honestly, right now, if I'm looking for a starter in this draft, and it's not like he has low upside either, I think Teddy Bridgewater is going to be the best quarterback from this class.
All right. We got just a couple minutes left, and I do want to hit on a few things here. Michael Schottie joining us from BleacherReport.com. I heard of something this morning that shocked me a little bit. Nobody expects Dallas to take a quarterback in the first round. I will assume, I think everyone will, that they will not take a quarterback in the first round. However, I did hear Herm Edwards suggest that they might be eyeing Jimmy Garoppolo, the quarterback from Eastern Illinois, a little bit later in the draft, maybe second round or beyond. This is a guy that's a Peyton Award winner, which is the top quarterback, top player in FCS football. I saw the guy in person a couple of years ago. I didn't see a lot, but certainly the numbers are staggering. And he's an Eastern Illinois guy, which is sort of an odd twist because those who've been frustrated with Romo know that he's an Eastern Illinois guy too. What is the likelihood that they may snatch him up, and where do you see him going in general?
The Cowboys are going to look for a quarterback at some point in this draft class. Jerry Jones might be enamored with Manziel, and for every other team in the league, that doesn't mean much. But Jerry Jones has typically drafted like a fan. He's typically drafted like he's drafting a fantasy football roster, and he doesn't know much about fantasy football. He's just taking the players he likes. That's who he is. And that's fine. Whatever. You own the team. I'm not a fan of them, so I'm not going to get mad about it. But it's possible if Manziel is available. I don't think he is, but it's possible the Cowboys might go there because that's what happens when you have an owner who, you know, bought his favorite toy and now he's just playing with it.
Right.
But as for Garoppolo, I think there's a solid chance if he makes it to their pick in the second round. I don't think they go out of their way to go get him. Garoppolo, the thing you hear everyone when they talk about him, it's his quick release. He fires out the ball. And it's not just that he makes a quick decision to get rid of the ball. It's that when he rears up to throw the ball, that ball is gone. There's little time. We talked about Tebow's elongated release. We've talked about, you know, Phillip Rivers' elongated release, Cam Newton. The opposite of that is Garoppolo. He just gets rid of the ball, and he spins it through the air. He doesn't have a great arm, but he can he does have a great arm. He doesn't have the strongest arm, but because of how quickly he spins it, because of how quickly he gets it out, he always gets completions, whereas other guys might not get a completion there. Other guys might take a sack there. He just gets rid of the ball. The problem with him is he played in a very strict air raid, one read and out offense. It's similar to what Brandon Weeden went through. Is he was in the it had great numbers in college at Oklahoma State, but then struggled to see the entire field when he got to the NFL. And I think Garoppolo is going to need a year or two to sort of catch up to that. Not even letting the speed of the game, you know, of course he didn't play against top-notch competition at Eastern Illinois. Speed of the game is one thing, but changing the way you see the field as a quarterback is another. And so a place like Dallas where he will get that chance, and it makes sense for Dallas as well. After Romo, who I think is, you know, Romo takes a lot of flack that I think he doesn't deserve.
True.
But behind him, Orton's career is almost ending. Brandon Weeden practically has grandchildren. He's almost, you know, he's considered one of the oldest quarterbacks in the league. The more people talk about him, the older he gets. Behind him, there's not a whole lot of starts left. And I think Wheaton is a project. You don't want to go into a season with Orton as your starter. If for some reason Tony Romo decided he was done tomorrow, they wouldn't have a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so I think you take Jimmy Garoppolo or some quarterback in the second or third round, and you basically say, this is our next guy. We'll let Wheaton and Orton sort it out for whoever's going to be the backup for this year, and that's our quarterback depth chart moving forward, and we feel a lot better about the most important position on the field going into 2014 and beyond.
Yeah, just because of this does not mean he's not a good quarterback, but I will say he not only plays in the FCS, which I have a lot of respect for. I mean, I spent a lot of time around FCS football, but he plays in a very subpar FCS conference, so those numbers are probably a little inflated. Plus, as you mentioned, an offense that certainly lends itself to putting up some big numbers. Real quick, what's the number? How many QBs in the first round?
The safe pick is three. The safe pick is that Manziel's probably going to go. Blake Bortles is probably going to go. Those are probably both in the top 15. And then we've got Teddy Bridgewater at some point. There is a chance that Derek Carr sneaks in. There is a chance that as you start talking about these guys who are these teams that didn't take a quarterback at the top of the first, whether it's Houston or Minnesota or Oakland or Jacksonville, some of those teams might start to get antsy, and we might see a trade back up into the first round. So the way it kind of is spread out, and there's teams too. We talked about Dallas. There are other teams out there that could potentially take a quarterback. The New England Patriots have been rumored at potentially taking a quarterback. Cincinnati Bengals have been joined with Teddy Bridgewater in the past. These are teams that don't need a quarterback immediately, but could take one. So I think the safe pick is three. Four is possible. Five would surprise me. And any more than that, and the league's just going crazy.
Does Chris Smith or Travis Watson get picked tomorrow?
Today, certainly not. Tomorrow, there's a really, really good possibility. Travis Watson, my second favorite center of the draft after Rich Berg from Colorado State. So I think there's a good chance he goes late second, early third round. Mm. And Chris Smith, you hear all different things on him. I've heard teams that have a first-round grade on him. I don't think he goes today, but I think there's a really good chance he's gone by the middle of round two tomorrow.
Okay, we could talk a lot longer, but we got to go. Michael, I appreciate you making some time on a busy day. Thank you so much. Can't wait to see how it plays out. We'll visit again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. We'll try to get Michael on next week, too, for a recap. That's Michael Schottie of BleacherReport.com. We got to take a break way behind. Quick segment coming up, and then we got our